90% of the
conversational
market. Didn't see
I think a real game changer.
The marketing automation discussion. Thank you, everybody, for listening in today. Today, I'm talking to Sankar Sundaresan. He is the CEO and founder of SkyJenny, a growth insights platform for B2B revenue leaders. SkyJenny's expandable AI-powered actionable insights enable CROs to drive more efficient and predictable growth and boost sales productivity. Hello, how are you doing this morning? Well, this evening, actually.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you very much for having me on your podcast. I'm really happy to be here and meet your audience virtually.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm keen to chat about this topic today, which is building that first sales team, because I have noticed often with a lot of the clients I work with, that's a real pain point in growth, is having the founder doing all the majority of the sales or the sort of the most important sales, and then trying to build that sales team around them. I was keen to know, as a founder in the same position, you know, what gets you thinking about when it's time to hire the first salesperson?
Right. No, good question, Ben. I'll preface my comments by saying that most of my experiences, certainly my recent experiences anyway, have been in the B2B tech world. And, you know, most of what I'm going to share in terms of, my experiences and my observations are sort of, you know, related to that context, just to set the, the frame of reference for the audience, right? So I think especially for B2B tech startups, founder-led sales is extremely critical, right? No matter whether you're a technical founder or a founder with prior sales and marketing experience, it's important for you to be front and center in getting the first few paying customers. I think it'll do three important things for you that are all sort of related to each other. Number one, I think it'll give you first-hand visibility to what customers actually think about your value prop, right? Are they excited and think that this will be a game changer? Or do you need to do more work to articulate exactly what problem you're solving and why it's important that that problem be solved well and in a different way than they're solving it today? Number two, it'll also expose you directly to the objections that prospect raise, right, as to why they aren't ready to, adopt your product or adopt your product yet, right? So this in turn, I think, will help you a lot in prioritizing what you need to build next, right? I've seen several startups struggle because their founders either didn't hear what early customers were articulating because they kind of didn't, take it upon themselves to be front and center in the sales process initially, or they heard customers, but they didn't really listen to them, right? I mean, I've certainly seen, founders have a lot of, staunch, conviction and feedback is really a good thing. But at the same time, if a number of customers are telling you the same exact thing at some point, it's probably worth stepping back and asking yourselves, maybe the customers are correct collectively. And what we've been, the beliefs that we've been hanging on to may need to be rethought, right? So as an early stage startup, I think it's super important for you to optimize all your investments to get that early customer traction. And in my opinion, the first truly, the true sales hire, right, who'll own sales end to end, should come only after the founding team has made the first few sales on their own, right? That's when I think, at a minimum, that's when you're ready to sort of, hire somebody to start of owning sales full time.
There's a lot to get into there. I have to say, I've seen firsthand what you're talking about, where a founder actually avoids going through the first couple of sales themselves and tries to delegate it either externally to another firm or to another team member. And inevitably what happens is probably what you're getting at there, which is you're unclear on what the value proposition really is to the end customer. And then you're also unsure of what those objections are. But if you go through the legwork, you will be well prepared, I suppose, to train somebody else. Would that be right?
Correct. Train somebody else, but also I think, understand for yourself, how competitive and how strong is your value prop and what objections, do you need to overcome, right, with product features, right? I mean, and unless you talk to real world customers, you never really get a good handle on, the range of objections that you hear, right? Because, something that you thought was not a big deal might end up becoming a huge deal that prevents adoption from your customers. So the best thing to do is get into as many sales conversations as possible and really try and iron out all of the, or at least handle as many objections as you can upfront, at least for a certain class of customer, right? So that for that class of customer, your product does something complete or complete enough to where they're willing to open up their checkbook and write you a check and start and put their reputation on the line in adopting an early stage startup's product.
When it comes to making that first sales hire, obviously all different kinds of businesses, and you're coming at this from the point of view of B2B tech. But could you talk us through a little bit of what goes through your mind for different types of businesses? So for example, a B2C versus a B2B, perhaps a tech versus a service, and what they should be thinking about for that first sales hire. For example, would it be better to be a junior or a part-timer, or these types of businesses need a commercial head, or what goes through your mind?
So I would say, you know, let me first answer that from a B2B perspective, then I'll try to take a shot at answering from a B2C perspective, because early in my career, especially during my time at HP, I worked on, you know, more than one B2C product, and I've got some experience in trying to set up and scale a B2C sales model as well. Right? But in the world of B2B, I would say initially hire one or two sort of junior SDRs, right? Their job is to bring you leads and first meetings, right? From that point onwards, I think it's a best practice for the founding team to do the discovery call, to understand the pain points, to understand the decision process that customers are going to follow to make a decision on making a purchase and potentially selecting the product that they're going to buy, right? And once we have a semblance of a process that we believe we can rinse and repeat, I think that's the time to start bringing in more sales, more sort of frontline sales, you know, sort of, you know, SDRs, and eventually full-time sales hires, right? And, you know, we've made our share of mistakes in trying to, you know, build a sales organization, Ben. And I would say, you know, bringing in somebody who's too senior, too early, actually does more harm than good, right? Because most of the part-time CROs or sort of the fractional CROs or other accomplished sales leaders that you find, they really are good at coaching junior sellers and putting in processes and systems to scale something that works and expand something that already works, right? So hiring a very senior person too early is almost like hiring a coach before you hire a team of players in a sports team, right? Because you want to hire players and then you want to bring in a coach, a very good one at that, to coach the players you've just brought on board, right? Bringing in the coach first and the players later is probably the wrong order in which to do things, right? Because most senior sales leaders, it's been many years, if not decades, since they've actually been into first pitch meetings and sold on their own.
Got it. Yeah, that's very interesting. I hadn't expected that. I would have thought that perhaps the idea would have been to bring around a senior person who would set in place the procedures, but that makes a lot of sense in that if they're the coach, they need the team first.
Correct. And definitely, you know, we worked with a lot of, I mean, you know, we've actually had experience in talking to a number of, you know, kind of fractional CROs. And I was under the same impression as well, you know, that, you know, all we need to do is bring in a fractional CRO, a senior season sales leader, and all our sales problems will be solved, right? I snap a finger, I hire the right person, and all of it's going to be solved. But then what I learned after a lot of time and expense was that necessarily wasn't the case, right? That bringing somebody like that too early actually ended up wasting time and resources as opposed to helping us.
And so as the founder or the entrepreneur in this case, what you're looking to have happen is you bring on the juniors who will build your pipeline and set up those discovery calls for you, or those closing sessions. And that will reduce the amount of time that you're investing in sales and business development to just that portion of the work. But they may also provide the opportunity for you to spot talent and promote within. Is that the idea?
Sure. That's certainly the idea. I mean, you know, certainly, you know, I mean, even in the, you know, in a lot of B2B, larger B2B sales organizations, right, you'll find that, you know, the career path for salespeople, it goes somewhat like this, right? They start as a sales development rep. Then once they really get good at it, they get promoted to become an account executive, right? Where they not only find the lead, do prospecting, find the leads, and then do some preliminary qualification and hand it off to an account executive. But as an account executive, they are now owning that opportunity, sales qualifying it, and then taking it all the way to closed one, right? And then bringing in bookings and then getting a handsome sales commission on top of that, right? So starting with SDRs, I would say, you know, you're investing in the type of talent that you really want, right? Because as a founder, it's probably not worth spending an enormous amount of your time looking for leads, you know, using the tools, prospecting tools out there, and compiling lists and doing some outreach to get the first meeting. But once you get the first meeting, I think that's when you really need to start getting involved, right? Because that discovery call, I think, is a treasure trove of very quickly learning, you know, customer pain points and the approach and feedback from customers in their own voice, right? And you don't want to delegate that too soon because, you know, stuff gets lost in translation all the time. And as an early stage startup, you don't want to lose anything at all in translation.
Yeah. So you want to make sure you're getting the maximum value through those discovery calls rather than outsourcing that too early. Before bringing on an SDR, what do you need to have in place to be ready for training this person or making sure that they're effective?
See, I would say have a clear idea of, or you know, have a hypothesis, right? Of course, you know, these are untested hypothesis till your SDR actually starts doing the outreach and starts getting traction, right? But have a hypothesis on who you think your ideal customers are, right? And try to be as specific as possible, right? I mean, do you describe them based on the number of employees? Do you describe them based on, you know, them being in a certain vertical, in a certain geography, in a certain segment of the market, or having a particular type of problem that you want to solve? Because, you know, you can define your target customers in many different ways, right? I mean, vertical segments and geographies are traditional ways of defining them. But there are, I've seen a lot of other, factors be used as well to, describe who the customer is that you're solving a problem for. And then once you describe the customer, especially in B2B, right, you've got to be also clear about the specific persona or the role within that type of customer, right? Am I trying to sell, you know, to the CFO or somebody in the finance organization? If so, who? Am I trying to sell a product to the head of engineering or a development manager, right? Or am I selling something to the legal team? Or am I selling something to the marketing team or the sales team? So the more clear you can be about specifically which titles you want to get meetings with, the more successful your SDR will be at finding the right type of people to have those first conversations with, right? And then, of course, once you have a good sense of what your ideal customer is and what the personas are within that customer, then you have to come up with a few key messages, right? What pain point and how does your product solve those pain points in a faster, better, cheaper way than other competing or substitute approaches to solving the same problem? And why, you know, again, at the end of the day, you know, convincing someone to take a first meeting is not easy, and you want them to really, you know, start taking the, you know, you want them to use a script that will connect with the audience without too many revisions, right? So I think these are some things that you want to have ready, you know, clear idea of who the customer is, clear idea of who the titles are within the customer that you want to reach, and what the script is that you would want them to use to articulate the product's value prop in as succinct a way as possible.
For the script, how tight do you tend to make these, or how tight do you suggest that people write these? For example, is it primarily sort of thematic, you know, hey, you want to send a message that's kind of about this and then draw them in this way and then talk about that? Or do you literally type it out for new people?
My preference is to actually type it out for new people, right? Is to type it out and say, hey, here is how and some of it also depends on, you know, are we trying to type out, you know, an email copy versus a, you know, a cold calling script, right? In a cold calling script, you want to be very, you know, tight with words, because people probably give you 15 to 20 seconds at the beginning to decide if they want to give you another 2 minutes to have the conversation, right? That's assuming that they answer the phone to begin with, right? What we tend to do, at least, is we tend to write a script out, right, as a starting point, right? And then every SDR will then customize it to their style of delivery and what they're comfortable with, right? Because no two SDRs are going to take the same exact script and deliver it the exact same way, right? They all have their, you know, ways of kind of breaking the ice initially and developing a little bit of a rapport with whoever, you know, they're trying to talk to. And we also encourage our SDRs to do a little bit of research on who they are calling, right? So that the first couple of sentences can be about the prospect that we're calling, right? And that's what we say, researched calls are always more effective than just random cold calls, right? So when it comes to cold calling scripts, right, you know, we generally have something written out that each SDR will come, take, and adapt and kind of personalize it to suit their delivery style. And for emails, I think it's a constant series of experimentation, right? To see, hey, we sent an email with this subject line and this kind of a message, right? So how many emails did we send and how many were opened and how many were replied to? Then you know, in the next sequence, we would try a slightly different message and it worded differently with a slightly different aspect of the value prop. And then we'll see how that performs, right? Because at the end of the day, I mean, this is probably the hardest portion of the entire journey, right? Is finding what works, right? And once you find what works, then it's relatively speaking easier to scale it and bring more people on and kind of, you know, create a process out of it, right? But just discovering and finding what works initially is significantly challenging.
When it comes to looking for these SDRs, is there anything that you're looking for in particular? Certain character traits, for example, someone more detailed or more personable, anything like this?
Yeah, generally speaking, you know, see, the SDRs that we have at Skygenie, they do both email outreach and cold calling, right? So of course, since you're going to be calling customers, and you know, we focus on reaching chief revenue officers and chief marketing officers and head of revenue operations. So we focus on reaching, you know, people that are slightly senior in the organization, C-level or one level below the C-level. So we want to make sure that anyone we bring on board, you know, can have a good grasp of the product and can have a good conversation, you know, with our prospective customers, right? So, and we also look for somebody who's kind of, you know, eager to learn and is not easily, you know, it doesn't give up easily, right? Because, you know, selling is hard no matter, you know, who you're selling for. You could be selling for Microsoft or Amazon or Google, and sales is a hard job, right? It gets significantly harder, you know, if you're selling for a company that doesn't have the brand recognition, you know, or awareness that some of the big brands have, right? So I think it's important to get somebody who is willing to try a number of different things with you till you collectively find something that works, right? So kind of that go-getter attitude and having, you know, kind of, you know, an acceptable level of communication skills, both written and verbal, are kind of the things that we look for when we bring on board SDRs.
In terms of setting their targets, how do you go about extrapolating that out when you've just brought them in?
Initially, a lot of the metrics are based on volume, right? Because, you know, because we collectively don't know what is going to work, right? All we can do is that, you know, we just have to make sure that we are trying hard enough, right? And to measure that, we have things like, you know, we'll give them goals for, hey, we need to be sending X number of emails. We need to be making Y number of phone calls every single day, right? And then, of course, you know, how much follow-on work results from that depends on how much traction your initial efforts are getting you, right? I mean, if I'm just making up some examples here just to give you an illustrative numerical example. Suppose you send 500 emails, right? And then 10 people respond, right? That's a, you know, in this day and age, that's not a bad response rate for cold email outreach, right? So then, of course, you follow up. Then you find an acceptable time that people are willing to meet, and then you schedule time, right? But initially, because you don't know what's going to elicit a response and at what rate, you initially have to just measure the volume of raw outbound activity, right? But then once you start getting some level of traction, then you can start setting goals in terms of, you know, I need you to set this many first meetings, and so on and so forth, right? But of course, I mean, a lot of the members of the audience probably already know, it's also important to set the right incentives, right? You know, for SDRs. So a lot of times people say, well, I'm not going to comp SDRs based on anything other than just, you know, for every first meeting you get a spiff. But other than that, that's pretty much it, right? So we kind of take a slightly different approach, especially since we don't have full account executives, right? We can empower our SDRs to act as though they were account executives, right? Even though they're not trying to make the full sale, we want them to see themselves as being as empowered as a full-fledged account executive would be, right? And we think that helps in, you know, kind of how they view their role and their level of motivation and how they talk to customers when they do get them on the phone.
So you mentioned positioning them so that they feel as though they are full account executives. Are you open to sharing what their compensation might look like to support that?
Sure. I mean, I'm just going to give you some directional guidance, right? So in our case, you know, we of course comp our SDRs for first calls, you know, for the first meetings they set up, right? There's of course a base pay, and then there is an additional incentive for setting up the first conversations. And we also comp them, you know, if the first conversation actually leads it to a sale, right? So that we want to be, you know, again, we want to share in the success that they helped create to begin with. And since we're a small team and since we don't have, an SDRs and AEs and a multiple levels of sales, team members to compensate, we can afford to compensate the SDRs when the initial lead that they brings in translates into a closed sale. Now, again, as you grow and scale and become more specialized, you have a team of SDRs and a team of account executives, it probably won't be possible to do this. And it may also not be necessary to do that, right? Because at that point in time, you have enough of a repeatable process to where you have more specialization, where there are specific roles and everybody is pretty clear on exactly what they're supposed to do and where their responsibilities end and where the responsibility of the next person begins, right? But in an early stage startup, it's really the founders and the SDRs. That's it. There's nobody else in the mix.
So as you expand, how and when do you add those layers in? Because I would imagine, obviously, you wouldn't just keep going with SDRs. You need to add extra layers in at some point.
Right, right. Yes, certainly, right? I mean, rather than having a fixed, hard and fast timeline, I would suggest looking at this in terms of milestones, right? When you get to certain milestones, they should serve as the trigger for changing the structure over time, right? I mean, the first few months and quarters is going to be all about discovering that process that works for your product with your target audience, right? And it's almost like a little bit of a scientist in a lab doing a series of experiments to see what's working, right? And once you find something that works, then you scale it, right? Then you start to expand the number of people doing it. And then at some point, you're going to say, hey, I'm going to be better served not by my SDRs bringing me first meetings and as a founding team us taking the discovery calls, and because at some point the volume is going to get to the point where as a founding team you don't have enough bandwidth to take all the discovery calls that need to be taken given the volume of discovery calls being set up, right? So when you're approaching that point, probably maybe a few months before you approach that point, is when I would say it makes more sense to become more specialized, right? Have a team of SDRs whose only job is to set the first meetings up, do the initial sales, initial qualification, and create an opportunity in your CRM and hand it off to an AE. And then at that point in time, the AE will kind of, take the ball and start running with it and try to convert that to a closed one booking, if you will, right? So I would say definitely experiment till you find something that you're happy and you're highly confident is going to work and scale. And even then, I would say expand the team of SDRs to where you're starting to get, more first meetings and proving to yourself that this process and model is going to scale. And when it gets to the point where you know you'll run out of bandwidth as a founding team to have those discovery calls, I would say that'll be the time to create more specialization and bring on AEs and have them have a distinct set of responsibilities that take the ball from the SDRs and start running with it.
For the account executives, do you recommend generally hiring externally or do you prefer to promote from within?
Promoting from within is always a good practice. And of course, as you probably have seen from my career background, I spent a number of years at HP and it was a company that prided itself on promoting from within for a long time. Right. So I think, your SDRs have grown up with you and in many ways, have invested a significant amount of time in helping you discover and create that initial process that works, right? So if you're confident that an SDR is going to be able to be successful as an account executive, then I think promoting from within is definitely preferable. And I think, you also minimize the amount of onboarding time a brand new person from the outside will need in order to get comfortable with the product, get comfortable with the customer's profile and the persona on articulating the value prop, right? Now, again, it may not always be possible to only promote from within, right? Especially if because then what you need to do also, you need to backfill your SDRs if you promote from within. So I think taking a balanced approach is probably one that would make sense, right? I would say if you have a team of SDRs, maybe promoting a couple of them, right? And then backfilling them, but also hiring one or two new AEs from the outside so that they can bring in new perspectives that probably you hadn't even thought about or experimented with, right, would be a good thing, right? It's always good to have a diverse team where some people have the knowledge and expertise, but some people come in with new ideas and fresh perspective. And when you combine the two, I think you can make more progress faster than if you exclusively had just one or the other.
It's a very interesting point because it's probably very intuitive to most people, but I hadn't put too much thought into the quality of the hire that you make at the bottom can affect the opportunities of promotion within down the track. So I've noticed, at least with a lot of startups that I've worked with, there can be a tendency of sort of trying to move quickly, fill in the gaps with the people that you need and not necessarily care too much about the future pipeline of potential. But based on what you're saying here, it would make a lot more sense to really invest in finding great people who can start out that at that level, but also grow into that future level over time.
Correct. And I think, you know, especially when you're in an early stage startup, right, you want people that are flexible and willing to try different things, right? Because it's pretty much, you know, you've seen yourself, Ben, and as most of your many members of your audience can, I think, attest to, right? It's a hard challenge, you know, going from, you know, no customers to the first dozen customers, right? So once you have a dozen or so customers, especially in a B2B tech startup, then you start to have a decent sense for what works and what doesn't work. But that journey to go from zero to the first dozen customers is by far the most challenging, right? And you certainly want to surround yourself with the best possible talent that you can afford to bring in at that point in time.
In the hypothetical case where, say, as a founder, you've made the first half a dozen sales, as an example, you've gone through the process, you've brought in some juniors to offload, you know, the lead and generation for you, and you just can't crack it. You know, you got lucky. What do you do in that situation?
At that point, I would step back and ask a broader question. If I were in that situation myself, Ben, I don't think at that point it's a problem of the sales. I don't think it's a problem of the salesperson not being effective, right? At that point in time, I think you probably have to step back and ask yourself, do I have a value prop that's powerful enough to get traction in its current incarnation or current, you know, form, if you will, right? So you've got to ask yourself, you know, do I persevere or do I pivot, right? And that's a question that almost all startups have asked themselves many times more than once, right? Because you have a hypothesis on, hey, this is going to work. This is a pain point that I think will be important to solve. And if I can get it in front of this type of customer and with this type of message, they are going to be favorably inclined to trying us out. And once they try us out, they're going to buy us. That's the hypothesis that almost all tech startups start with, right? But if you have the initial few customers, right, and then, you know, you kind of stall out, right? I mean, this is the classic problem that, you've got a lot of books like, you know, Crossing the Chasm and such being written about, right? You've kind of exhausted those early adopters. Then how do you go to mass market? I mean, there's a lot of literature out there that recommends certain approaches, right? But I would resist the tendency to blame the salesperson for lack of further progress, right? Because if things are stalling out, it's not because the salespeople are being lazy or they're not trying hard enough. A lot of times it's probably because, you know, you have a value prop that's too narrow and doesn't appeal to a broad enough portion of the market.
I can see what you mean, because if you would change that positioning, for example, even if there's a tactical problem in how you're doing your cold calls or how you're doing your email outreach, all of those things should become far more effective with the right positioning anyway. Would that be right?
That would be absolutely correct. That would be absolutely correct. And like I said, it's a, you know, and even, you know, in this day and age, right, especially since many prospects are being bombarded with emails and phone calls and other forms of outreach through LinkedIn, there is a lot of fatigue, right? There's a lot of fatigue and most customers, even ones that have a real need, have kind of, you know, put up these shields and that they're really hard to penetrate through, right? Because the people are being tired of being pitched to or being sold to. And so, you know, it's also a question of, you know, staying at it long enough to where you're able to reach the right buyer with the right message at the right time, right? Because all three have to click for you to start getting traction, right? So it's certainly a question of, you know, not giving up too soon and trying for long enough and trying to reach as many prospects as you can. Because, you know, you may be right, you know, you may be reaching the right person with the right message, but maybe it's the wrong timing, right? Maybe they have no budgets to make any purchase, or this person may be brand new in their role and trying to get their bearings on, you know, what are some of the problems I need to solve? Or it could be somebody else who's overwhelmed with other challenges that they're trying to solve right now, where the problem that you're solving is not a current priority for them, right? So there's so many reasons why you may not get traction from most people you reach out to, right? So I think it's very important to kind of, you know, have the persistence. I don't know if you watch the movie, you know, called the founder, which is about Ray Kroc, the guy that created McDonald's in its current form, right? So there's a scene where Michael Keaton is rehearsing for a speech where he says, it's all about persistence, right? That's the only quality that matters in a founder, right, is persistence, right? So, I mean, I would say, don't give up too soon. But if it's very clear that stuff isn't working, don't just blame the salesperson, because that's the easiest thing to do. But almost always, I think that's the wrong conclusion, right? I mean, because, you know, you can switch the salesperson to a different salesperson, but I'd be very surprised if you don't, if you're going to get completely different results without making other changes.
Say you've brought in the first couple of people. How do you go about managing them on a weekly or monthly basis to make sure that they're being productive?
Right. So we, you know, again, we track a few metrics, a few key metrics. I mean, only, you know, a handful of them, right? So if we look at the number of emails that we send, we look at the number of, the open rate, the bounce rate, the reply rate. We experiment with different messages and see which ones work better. You know, we track how many calls did we make, how many people picked up, how many, you know, and we go listen to some of the conversations that our SDRs have had with prospects to see what kind of objections are they hearing and what kind of feedback are they hearing, right? So in the initial, like, you know, few months or quarters, it's all about making sure that the volume of activity, right, is at a certain minimum level so that you can start to get results, right? So then when you start to get results, then you can, of course, shift the metrics to become more outcome-oriented as opposed to more input-oriented. But initially, you only have input-oriented metrics. Because you can hire an SDR, for example, and tell them, hey, I want you to get me, you know, 10 first meetings in the first month, right? That's a highly aspirational goal. And if you get very lucky, maybe they will get you first 10 meetings in the first month, right? But it's more important to figure out what is working, right? And because, you know, a lot of things have to work and work well for you to land that first meeting, right? So like I said, the right message, the right person at the right time. And a lot of times you're not going to be coming out of the gates blazing with such stellar results. And again, you know, I know some people, you know, have a product that sells itself, and they may get a lot of very, very good traction very quickly. But more often than not, I think it's a question of experimenting, trying different things, and being structured about it, right? Because, you know, as with any, you know, the scientific experimentation method is all about varying a small number of inputs and seeing how the output varies, right? And so doing a series of experiments to see what works better than what else, right, is I think important.
As the entrepreneur, as the team grows larger and you add more of those layers, how does that management of the team or the function change away from volume-based metrics? Would it become more, you know, strategic or leadership oriented, or would you be getting still, you know, down and dirty and listening to recordings, or what would you be doing?
Right. Now, the entrepreneur, of course, you know, does different things, right? I mean, of course, you cannot scale if you as an entrepreneur are going to be listening to, spending as much time listening to, you know, SDR calls as you do initially, right? So that's when you start to bring in other leaders, right? You probably have SDR managers, right, whose job it is to set goals for SDRs and coach them. But you still, you know, whether it's the founder or entrepreneur doing it or somebody else doing it, I think you should always have, you know, folks listening to a sampling of calls to see, you know, to kind of hear the voice and tone of the customer or the prospect as they're speaking, right? In fact, I know there's, you know, Amazon is famous for requiring all of their vice presidents, right, to spend, I think, one day a month, well, you know, kind of, you know, listening to calls that their support, customer support representatives take, right? By kind of listening on a parallel line, if you will. Right? That's how I think a company the size of Amazon still, you know, has its senior executives kind of, you know, keep hear in quite literally hear the voice of the customer, right? So I think, you know, as you scale, you start to bring in, you know, people that whose job it is to lead and manage and set goals and guide and coach SDRs, right? So that, you know, we see this happening with a lot of our current customers because we work with a lot of B2B sales organizations, right? You know, there's an entire demand gen organization that's made up of SDR managers and SDRs. And then, you know, they typically report up into the CMO office or the chief marketing officer. And then they work very closely with account executives, right? So they're supposed to generate, you know, prospect, generate leads, do some basic qualification of the lead, and then do a warm handoff to an account executive, right? And so there are pairings of SDRs with account executives by territory, and they typically all fit into what they call a sales pod, right? A sales pod is made up of sometimes a dedicated AE or sometimes a fractional, you know, AE, but paired with a, you know, a dedicated or a fractional SDR, right? Then supported by both an SDR manager, you know, and a manager of the account executive himself or herself.
Reflecting back on this process, so say they're building this first team, where do you see, or what would you suspect would be the major reasons that the process would go off the rails and sort of not work as well as it should?
A lot of it comes back to, I mean, assuming that you're hiring, you know, competent people and you're equipping them reasonably well, right? Then in spite of doing all that, if stuff isn't working, I would say then it's you know, it's probably because you still don't have good product market fit, right? I mean, as cliched as that might sound, right? A lot of times, not having good product market fit is going to reflect itself in many ways, right? You know, including, you know, a lot of initial sales efforts not succeeding. Like maybe you have the right value prop, but maybe you're targeting the wrong, you know, the wrong market, or you may be in the right market, but targeting the wrong buyer, right? Or possibly with the wrong message, right? So there are a number of things that could be culprits for why your outreach efforts aren't working and some a lot of the initial efforts are not giving you the traction that you want, right? But that's when you've got to methodically, you know, diagnose what the problem is and what's not working. Do you have a fundamental product market fit problem, right? Because if you get, you know, if you get a handful of customers, the first half a dozen customers, then clearly, you know, there is some proof there that you have some level of product market fit, especially because otherwise customers aren't going to, you know, pay and adopt your product if you're not solving a pain point for them, right? So it's a question of, you know, how well do you understand that, you know, that customer profile, if you will, and how effective and disciplined are you about finding more customers like your initial customers and going after them, right? So it's all about, I would say, you know, systematically eliminating, you know, what, you know, eliminating, you know, systematically looking at a number of different possible root causes, eliminating them one by one, right, till you find what is actually causing the whole thing not to work, right? Because it's like a chain of events, right? Every link in the chain has to work for you to go from putting together that initial sales team to starting to get a continual stream of first meetings, right? And if any one link in the chain doesn't work, your stream of first meetings gets disrupted.
Yeah, very logical. I like that point about going through it each step and reviewing. And it makes a lot of sense that the product market fit, as you mentioned before, if you make sure that that is correct, each of those steps will be more effective, even if there's a tactical execution issue.
Correct.
Fantastic. Excellent. Just before we go, for people who want to connect with you and learn more about SkyJenny, where should they go?
Sure. Our website, www.skyjenny.com, that's SkyJenny.com, is a good starting point to get a good sense for what we do and, you know, and book a product demo to see our product in action. People can also connect with me on LinkedIn. Sankar Sundaresan, CEO of SkyJenny. You know, we're based in San Jose, California and Silicon Valley. And it's fantastic to be on your podcast, Ben, and talk to your audience. Thank you very much for having me.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.